Hi, this is Jean Bruce Scott.
And Randy Reinholz.
And when we're not busily producing some of the most outstanding Native American theater in Los Angeles,
we always like to check out the best of British audio adventures with Alex Lefchuk and his team of the Midweek Drive.
And Midweek Drive morning editions on Siren FM.
And southsidebroadcasting.podbean.com.
I was watching two wonderful movies recently, which featured a fine young actress performing outstandingly well with Errol Flynn, Ronald Reagan, and also a certain David Niven. The David Niven movie was, of course, Raffles. The Ronald Reagan and Errol Flynn movie was the wonderful Santa Fe. Who was the actress? Olivia de Havilland, 104 years young when she finally left this mortal coil, and a good friend, of course, of our next correspondent, and indeed somebody who's going to spend a few moments paying tributes to the awesomeness of this Academy Award-winning soul. It's the wonderful Richard Fitzwilliams. How are you, Richard?
Well, deeply sad at her passing. I mean, it's really something that, well, it's quite hard to come to terms with, especially since I knew her for over 40 years, but she really was immortal, so to speak. I mean, she was it, because she was the longest living ever Oscar winner, and also the oldest person ever to be made a dame. This was when she was 100. And somebody of enormous charm, somebody who, through the years, the way that, for example, she had this unique style of writing, which had particularly the humorous part, but also a fascinating mix. It very much displayed her personal interests, because I used to visit her in Paris over the years, and we corresponded, and I used to look forward to receiving these lovely missives. And also, it dated back from 1976, when, as editor of the International Who's Who, I took over. And to my horror, there were some huge gaps in the volume, apart from Elvis. There was no Olivia de Havilland, and I thought, you know, you wouldn't expect people to return forms 40 years after they should have been included. She returned it with an absolutely enchanting letter, and that's when it all began.
I mentioned a couple of the movies there, and in terms of, as I say, sharing thoughts of the whole Olivia de Havilland world, she was born, of course, in Tokyo originally, spent 3 years of her life there, and then, of course, became one of the Hollywood royalty. I'm tempted to actually say you have Kirk Douglas, 103, Olivia de Havilland, 104. So, you know, result for Olivia. She's just about, she beat Kirk Douglas in the end, which was fine in terms of the innings. Clearly, many folk will actually sort of connect her with the heiress, or indeed Gone with the Wind, or indeed some of the latter work that she was obviously responsible for. I mean, she was a prodigious person, but of course she was also responsible for actually breaking the whole studio slave system, because her strike effectively led to the ruling that studios could no longer own actors as though they were cattle and lend them out as and when to other studios.
You know, this is very important, and this is what has been given such weight in huge obituaries in the Times, the Telegraph here, in the New York Times, for example. The fact that she basically freed actors from a certain amount of enslavement by studios in 1943. I mean, she succeeded where Betty Davis failed. She was under a 7-year contract to Warner Brothers. Those were the normal length of contracts. And they studios could lend actors out, and you could, to some extent, do your own thing, but they could add that to your contract. And she, under the de Havilland laws, it became known, basically it meant that 7 years was the maximum. And that was something which the industry benefited from enormously when, so far as the actors in it are concerned. You mentioned the infamous Hitchcock quote, actors should be treated like cattle. Well, she did her best and did brilliantly to make sure that they weren't, at least in the same way. She'd had very, very sad experiences with some of her Warner Brothers contract, because they could use you in whatever they wanted, and she was in quite a few films that were very forgettable. But it was firstly, A Midsummer Night's Dream in the 1930s, where she played Hermia, which launched her career. What cemented it was obviously Gone with the Wind, where she played Melanie, the enchanting, you could say, rival to Scarlett O'Hara, the wonderfully duplicitous role played by Vivien Leigh. And I mean, that Gone with the Wind is still a film, obviously, of its time, and one that has attitudes that we view with horror today. But the facts were, and I think still are, that it is not only the most successful film ever made, adjusted for inflation, but also probably been seen since it was made in 1939, I think, by more people than any other film. So this was absolutely pivotal. The fact that she was nominated, there were 5 nominations in her overall for Best Supporting Actress, so she lost out to Hattie McDaniel, the first African-American to win an Oscar, who played Mammy in Gone with the Wind. And there was her partnership, which was really pivotal to those follow-up films, with Errol Flynn.
As I mentioned, Errol Flynn probably responsible for some of the greatest seafaring epics ever, possibly, arguably, including Master and Commander. But let's not go there on this little tribute day, because that's another issue for another time. I've cited 2 movies that I saw very recently with Olivia de Havilland, which, I thought were really quite effective for different reasons. One, of course, was the David Niven Raffles, and the other one was Santa Fe, which, of course, featured the wonderful Ronald Reagan in one of his early roles, as well as Errol Flynn from that point of view. clearly she won the Academy Award for The Heiress, and I believe she also won it for another production as well. But it would be remiss of us not to at least spend a few moments just asking for your own input. And probably, well, she may not have ever discussed this with you, but what was the truth behind the so-called family feud between, of course, Olivia de Havilland and Joan Fontaine? Were they good friends?
Well, to spend a minute on the Oscars, yes, she won for The Heiress playing Henry James's heroine, and I thought that was a superb role. The other was for To Each His Own, where she played the unmarried mother who gives up her child, and she turned down, important just to mention this, she turned down the role of Blanche in A Streetcar Named Desire because she'd recently become a mother and wasn't the sort of role that she felt she could empathize with. But indeed, the rivalry between her and her sister, Joan Fontaine, also an Oscar winner, and this was a very, very high profile. There were lots and lots of comment pieces, lots of gossip about this.
There was the famous photograph of basically where they're supposed to be backstage at the Oscars and they're refusing to shake hands. I think that was what really kind of grew from, I believe.
Oh, it did indeed. When she was 100, she felt she was able to comment on it, and which I think few would quibble with, and she confirmed that, you know, they had been extremely distant. It's not something, as you say, that I ever discussed with her, but she never talked about it before reaching that milestone. So there it is. It certainly fed an enormous number of gossip columns, and there was much comment over the years. Also, her various relationships, particularly... she recently cleared up the rumours about her and Errol Flynn. They didn't actually have an affair. What happened was there was a very strong chemistry on the screen, and that's why the movies were so popular. But especially also just to mention The Adventures of Robin Hood, which has become a classic, and it ended with they died with their boots on, where at one point Flynn says that to have... gone through life knowing you is a very gracious thing, which I think puts it rather well. What in actual fact happened was she did indeed have a crush on him, but he was married at the time and they never actually had an affair. It on screen, of course, that 8 films, I think, a lot of them are really top hits, but it was always the possibility of that. And I mean, it would have been fascinating, but remembering how Flynn sadly met his end, perhaps just as well.
Well, again, that's for another story for another time, but interesting enough, Joan Fontaine quoted as saying, "Let me just say, Olivia and I have never had a quarrel, we have never had any dissatisfaction, we have never had hard words, and all this is press." She, of course, passed away in 2013. I suppose, ultimately, it kind of goes to show that, you know, this fragile world in which we live, we are literally just players on the stage of life. The great globe itself shall in itself disappear, paraphrasing, of course, The Tempest, and so on. We are such stuff as dreams are made on. Richard, I mean, in terms of personal favourites of Olivia de Havilland, do you have any which particularly stand out? I mean, you mentioned a couple of, obviously, the Academy Award ones. I've mentioned a couple of my favourites. Airport 77, presumably, in her latter years, not necessarily one of the greatest, but at the same time, she still had a stage presence and was actually working up until the mid-1980s, of course.
Oh, she was, yes, and there were a lot of television appearances. She was based in Paris since 1953. Hollywood, as a town, and it's with its ups and downs and... it has to be said, she didn't empathise with it. She, as we mentioned with the de Havilland Law, could take on Warners and indeed got blacklisted for 2 years after winning the case on the issue of contracts. But Paris was where she made her home, and this was, she was rather like an unofficial American ambassador in Paris, really. She won Honor and in America, the National Academy in and an American award, the National Medal of Arts. But she did keep on working. If I had to choose favourites, I did think her Melanie in Gone with the Wind was perfect. I think that They Died with Their Boots On, there's an abominable take on history where Errol Flynn plays General Custer and she plays opposite him again. It was great fun, but I must say I would choose The Adventures of Robin Hood because it's become one of those classic movies that's always reshown and it seems to have a sort of life of its own. Definitely the heiress, a superlative performance. But she actually she had quite a range. I mean, when she played a schizophrenic in The Snake Pit, I mean, that was really pushing the boundaries. And she did 49 films in all, dating back from the mid-30s, as you mentioned, a lot of television. And she also most memorably appeared in 2003 at the Oscars, when Oscars celebrated 75 years, and she got tumultuous applause. I mean, that was wonderful. And if listeners would like to see that, it's available on YouTube. If you just Google Olivia de Havilland Oscar's 75th appearance, it's wonderful. They play the theme of Gone with the Wind, and then she talks about the times after the Iraq War, and also the magic of the movies. It's a wonderful clip.
In all, two Oscar award-winning sessions, 15 wins in other categories, 7 nominations, awards going all the way up to the New Mexico Film Critics Award in 2017, won the Glenn Strange Honorary Award, Cine Euphoria, lots and lots of awards from that point of view. Richard, again, obviously, condolences because clearly sad loss. I know, fortunately, one of our own Academy Award winners, Shirley Jones, is still with us, I think just about, and logging into the place for that. However, is this, I mean, I know it's a cliche to say this and times change. Is this really the end of an era in terms of that Hollywood area that goes back to when, obviously, the whole Dream Factory was really in its heyday?
The word, yes, I think actually I like the way you've described it because it was very much a Dream Factory. I mean, the word golden age is used. What that actually meant, though, it could be pretty ruthless, as we've been mentioning, for actors very much doing what they are told to do at the studio's behest. But there was a particular era, which of course meant that Hollywood had amazing reach and dominant cinema. And I mean, this, she was the last link to that, and also too, of course, given the fact that she began making movies in mid-1930s. So you really are looking at an amazing span of years. And of course, Gone with the Wind, which obviously was still making a huge amount of money. There's no question that, as I say, Hollywood and its value system did not appeal to her, but she found a home in Paris, absolutely beautiful home, which I used to visit when I was on my trips there. And she was so wonderfully hospitable. And it was absolutely fascinating talking to her. Her recall in later years, you know, she would talk about current affairs with such perspicacity, and then conversation would flick back to the 1930s and 40s. And I mean, there was such interest there in humanity. She was a humanitarian, and she was a deeply missed friend now.
And when was the last time you finally managed to speak to her, Richard?
That was a couple of years ago, and I mean, a tremendously warm, we always spoke after each new year, and tremendous also for somebody who, I mean, I was unwell for a period, she lit a candle for me. A friend indeed over 40 years.
Well, Richard, hopefully we've managed to pay some appropriate tributes to Olivia, and loads more will obviously be there. Olivia de Havilland, born, of course, July the 1st, 1916, of course, passed away July 26th, 2020. Richard Fitzwilliams, many thanks indeed for that. I'm sure Olivia will be looking down saying, go, Richard, go. You've got lots of other film reviews to actually go for and other bits and pieces. And I would still say you should check out, if you haven't, Olivia's fantastic role as the female love interest in Raffles with David Niven. Literally 1939, fine movie.
Indeed, and I thank you so much for giving me the opportunity to talk about a truly unique life.